Good morning. It's Tuesday, July 29th. I'm Shamita Basu. This is Apple News Today. On today's show, inside the data deal between the IRS and ICE, allegations of a car company's dark history in the Amazon and the priest who brought it to light, and the first state to introduce health warnings for social media. But first, it's a critical week for the U.S. economy. A flood of economic data is coming. New consumer confidence and spending figures, major reports on GDP, inflation data, corporate earnings, and a new jobs report will offer a glimpse into the state of the labor market. Bloomberg's Sean Donnan told us these will provide a clearer picture of the impact of President Trump's sweeping tariffs, which he started to ramp up in earnest back in April.
One of the things we're looking for there is, are we seeing companies continue to hire, particularly in the private sector? Or, as a lot of economists have warned, are they just going to be kind of sitting on hiring decisions because of all the uncertainty that's created in the economy by these tariffs?
And it'll be a big week for policy decisions. The Federal Reserve will announce its next interest rate decision tomorrow. Trump will be closely watching. He's expressed frustration that Fed Chair Jerome Powell hasn't lowered rates and has repeatedly threatened to fire Powell, even though he doesn't have the legal authority to do so. The Fed has been reluctant to lower rates over concerns about how Trump's tariffs could drive up inflation. Then on Thursday this week, a federal appeals court will hear oral arguments in a lawsuit challenging the legality of Trump's tariffs.
He's claimed that there's an emergency in the U.S. trade deficit and that that gives him the authority to impose these tariffs. Now, that's been challenged by a group of small businesses, including a wine importer and a toy company, and they actually won their challenge at what's known as the Court of International Trade, but that's now been appealed.
Donnan says the case could very likely go all the way to the Supreme Court. But even as that's happening, the president has threatened new tariffs on a number of trading partners if they don't agree to deals, with a deadline of this Friday.
And there's some big ones that are still out there that are meaningful in terms of the volume of trade and their importance to American consumers because of the goods that come from there.
Like India, Brazil, Australia, and Bangladesh, which has a big textile industry that exports to the U.S. Also, South Korea.
South Korea is home to Samsung, smartphones, a lot of consumer technology products. It also has a big chips industry. It also has a big auto industry that exports to the United States.
These countries could still reach agreements with the U.S. before Trump's deadline, as we just saw the European Union do over the weekend. But Donnan says it's all but certain Trump raises tariffs on their imports to some degree. For example, he originally threatened the EU with a 30% tariff, and the recent framework deal settled on a 15% tariff for most products.
And I think this is something we need to remind ourselves of over and over again. We have seen this year the biggest increase in U.S. tariffs since the 1930s. And those are going to have a meaningful effect on both the price of goods here in the United States, but also economic relationships all over the world and for years to come.
So far, the economy has appeared pretty resilient to these major changes, but plenty of economists remain concerned about the risk of inflation or a weakened job market. By the end of this week, we should have a much clearer picture what kind of economic direction we're heading in. Let's turn now to how the Trump administration is upending privacy norms to change how government agencies operate to carry out its immigration agenda. We've previously highlighted reporting from NPR about an effort from DOGE and the Department of Homeland Security to build out a national citizenship database. And the Associated Press previously reported that the administration was giving ICE access to data of millions enrolled in Medicaid. Now, ProPublica reports that the IRS is working on a program that would provide an unprecedented level of confidential information to deportation officers.
Engineers at the IRS are building a system that would then automate the disclosure of taxpayer data to ICE.
William Turton is one of the ProPublica reporters who got their hands on blueprints of this system.
it's important to understand that taxpayer data is among the most confidential data held by the U.S. government. There's extremely strict privacy laws that protect it from disclosure, even to law enforcement agencies.
In fact, it is so closely guarded that the IRS resisted previous efforts from DOGE to get access to taxpayer data. The agency's chief counsel was removed from his role earlier this year and replaced by Andrew DeMello, who was seen by Trump administration officials as being more willing to enact elements of the president's agenda. Yet ProPublica reports that last month, DeMello refused to turn over the addresses of more than 7 million taxpayers sought by ICE, saying the request did not meet specific legal guardrails that safeguard private taxpayer information. 2 days later, he was removed from his job.
We don't know for sure exactly why DeMello was removed, but it is fascinating because DeMello was installed into the chief counsel job, and many people at IRS thought he was unqualified for the job, and thought that he would be friendly to the Trump administration priorities.
He wasn't the only one to leave. Melanie Krauss, the IRS's acting commissioner, reportedly resigned over the data sharing deal. There is an established process for law enforcement to seek IRS data to support active criminal investigations. Former IRS officials told ProPublica that in the past, law enforcement officials would present full explanations for why the information was necessary, and those requests typically involved fewer than a dozen people at a time, not millions as was requested recently. One former IRS official who'd been advising the agency on this issue told ProPublica, "There's no way ICE has 7 million real criminal investigations." According to ProPublica, the system that the IRS is now building would give ICE automatic access to home addresses, bypassing traditional protocols and opening the door to serious errors. Essentially, DHS would send the IRS a spreadsheet of people it's targeting for deportation, including their previous addresses. The IRS system would then try to match that information with a specific taxpayer record. And if there's a match, it pulls that person's most recent address.
We showed the technical blueprints to people familiar with IRS data, familiar with IRS systems, who said that this system is almost guaranteed to make mistakes. That because of the way that ICE submits data and it gets searched through IRS systems, it's extremely likely that the IRS, if using the system, could return the wrong address to ICE, leading to an ICE raid on the wrong address.
Turton reports that engineers are still working on the system, but they hope to roll it out soon. A spokesperson for the White House told ProPublica that the planned use of IRS data is legal and part of fulfilling a campaign promise on immigration. Meanwhile, data privacy advocates took the government to court, and a federal judge refused to block the IRS from sharing the data, but in its ruling, it did make clear that ICE could only request the information in specific, targeted circumstances. Advocates are now appealing that judgment, and 90 Democratic lawmakers have joined with a similar request to the court. Now to a Washington Post investigation about one man's efforts to hold a major car maker accountable for allegedly abusing workers in Brazil for years.
The story is really a confluence of power, greed, and religion.
Terry McCoy is the Rio de Janeiro bureau chief for the Washington Post. Back in the 1960s, Brazil's military dictatorship wanted to expand development in the Amazon rainforest, and it wanted global corporations to help bankroll those plans. Sensing an opportunity, Volkswagen Brazil, which at the time was the largest car maker in Latin America, decided they could be giants in both cattle and cars.
They got into this sort of seemingly quixotic plan, which was to deforest the Amazon and then raise cattle where the forest had been. The Volkswagen farm brought in masses of workers and laborers from all over the country to work in this place. And now Brazilian prosecutors are saying many of these workers, hundreds, were enslaved. And this has really only come to light as a result of a priest who has maintained these records for decades.
Volkswagen promised these workers good pay and the opportunity for a better life, but many say they were forced to work and brutally beaten by the contractors who ran the farm. One man said he spent 7 years there and was never allowed to leave.
And there was allegedly a cave on the property where people were killed and the bodies were dumped. Some people were successfully escaped, other people apparently did not. And so it's a shadow that haunts these workers this day. And old men during these interviews were weeping, crying about what they had gone through 40 years ago on this property.
State authorities found evidence of forced labor on the farm four separate times, but the Post couldn't find any records of charges filed against the operators of the farm. As its reputation grew, a local priest became increasingly concerned. He tried to raise the alarm to authorities at the time, but got nowhere, so he started collecting evidence.
He started building this massive dossier of all the people he was interviewing, of all the newspaper clippings, the reports that are coming out about this place, and it grew and it grew and it grew, and to the point where now it exceeds 1,000 pages.
He identified at least 69 potential victims, and in 2019, he contacted a prosecutor who works on slave labor cases for Brazil's labor ministry. He shared his dossier, and last year, prosecutors filed a lawsuit accusing Volkswagen of exploiting slave labor and human trafficking on a systemic scale.
This is the first time that Brazil is moving to account for what had occurred, which were, at that era, extraordinary, horrendous human rights abuses that are virtually unknown to the outside world and are virtually unknown to Brazilians themselves.
Volkswagen has denied the allegations. And in court, they've argued they were just a shareholder in the farm, that a separate company owned it and was responsible for hiring the contractors who ran it. McCoy says evidence presented to the ministry disproves that. A decision is expected from a federal labor court any day now. Before we let you go, a few other stories we're following. In New York, at least four people, including a police officer, were reportedly killed in a shooting in Midtown Manhattan yesterday. The alleged gunman, initially identified as a 27-year-old from Las Vegas, also died from a self-inflicted gunshot wound. He reportedly walked into a Park Avenue building with a long rifle and opened fire. Authorities say he acted alone. The skyscraper is the headquarters of several major corporations, including Blackstone and the NFL. President Trump has acknowledged there is real starvation taking place in Gaza, contradicting the denials from Israel. And for the first time, two Israeli human rights groups say that Israel is committing genocide in Gaza. The World Food Program says hundreds of thousands are living in, quote, famine-like conditions. And the World Health Organization has described a marked spike in malnutrition-related deaths. Trump said Israel bears a lot of responsibility for the food scarcity and pledged to work with European allies to set up food centers. And NPR reports that starting next year, any Minnesotan using a social media app will get a digital warning label telling them about the potential dangers to their mental health. In a first-in-the-nation move, users in the state will have to click through an acknowledgement before their daily scroll. Platforms will also have to provide resources like hotlines to support people struggling with mental health. Governor Tim Walz signed the law to start this time next year, but companies say they will be pushing to have it rolled back. You can find all these stories and more in the Apple News app. And if you're already listening in the news app right now, we've got a narrated article coming up next. The San Francisco Chronicle looks at how the Bay Area is graying. It's the third oldest among 20 of the largest regions in the U.S., and it's growing older faster than any of them. The paper examines what that'll mean for housing, healthcare, education, and social services in years to come. If you're listening in the podcast app, follow Apple News Plus Narrated to find that story. And I'll be back with the news tomorrow.